And good morning once again, and welcome to The Other Side of Midnight. I'm your host, Richard C. Hoagland, and we actually have some breaking news at the top of the show this morning. There's a tsunami advisory for California in effect right now until, I guess, about 5 a.m. Pacific. There was an earthquake earlier last evening off Chile, about an 8.3. I think it was an 8.3. And anyway, tsunamis can be very dangerous. When Robin and I were on the cruise three years ago, I think back in 2012, we went to Chichen Itza. On the way back, it was the other cruise, the cruise the previous couple of years. In 2011, there was a major, major earthquake off Japan, and a tsunami was sent rippling all across the Pacific Ocean. And what was really interesting is that along about, the other side of midnight, 2, 3 a.m., the waves, which had rippled across the Pacific at 600 miles an hour. I mean, tsunami is the closest thing on this planet to a frictionless energy transfer. So when you get that water moving, billions and billions and billions of tons of water. By the way, a billion tons of water, for someone who wrote to me a few days ago, is a gigaton. A gigaton is a billion. A giga is a billion. So billions and billions and billions of tons of water racing, you know, up and down, the waves moving forward, carries a lot of energy. And when it gets to the shore, it converts a lot of that energy into destruction. And then some of the energy is reflected as a secondary tsunami back out to sea. So we're coming up along the Baja coast, probably, 100 miles offshore. And sure enough, I was up on deck because we were doing some star sights that night for people. And you could actually tell when the waves hit the ship. The sound change, you could hear the slapping at the on the hull. And we were doing, 20, 22 knots, something like that. We were clipping along, heading back to L.A., and in the middle of the night, the sound changed on deck, and the motion of the ship changed. And I began to get seasick. So I went to bed. Robin was smart. She was already in bed, sound asleep. So we need to be very wary of the tsunamis, waves that could be coming up the coast from Chile and interacting with the Los Angeles and San Diego and the rest of California coastline in a progression from south to north over the early morning hours in the next couple, 3 hours. So do not go out on the pier. The Santa Monica Pier is a nice place to be. I've had breakfast on it. I've had dinner. I've had brunch. I've had cocktails. Get off the pier. You know, we don't know how big the waves are. I haven't been able to monitor the tsunami network because I've been getting ready for the show. Ross has been actually monitoring things, and he's been sending me email updates. So if you are in California and along the coast, for God's sake, do not take a walk on the beach tonight and do not go out on piers. And if you think you're far enough upstream or above sea level, check again, because depending upon the strength and the currents and the vagaries of reflection from underwater obstacles, you know, seamounts and stuff like that along the coast, you might think you're safe and suddenly you find yourself hip deep in water and in the middle of the night in the dark. You do not want to do that. So pay attention carefully. Please pay attention carefully and stay safe. Okay, another couple of things I want to bring up. Other Side of Midnight has a Facebook page. Surprise, surprise. So I'd like everyone to kind of go over to our Other Side of Midnight Facebook page and take a look at what we have up there. We have some interesting items. There's also my Facebook fan page, which is got something like 48,000 followers right now. And one of those followers, and let me click over my email here so I get this correctly. One of those people, following last night's show or yesterday morning show, I'm still wrestling with the, you know, which is it, Memorex or whatever. They sent us a link to something that I have been looking for years, which is posted tonight on our Other Side of Midnight, on my own Facebook page over on Facebook. A guy named K-Dub from Belgab sent Ross an actual YouTube link to the documentary that was done by a Canadian film group of our voyage beyond Apollo back in 1972. As it came up last night in discussions with Amy M. and Tim Underwood, because I knew Isaac Asimov and knew him really, really well, when the last Apollo mission to the moon loomed, I got this idea, why don't I invite a whole bunch of interesting people on a ship in the analog of spaceships and ocean-going ships on this planet, and we'll spend a few days, you know, going down to see the launch. It was the last launch of the Apollo program. It was the first night launch of Apollo and the last. And believe me, if you had never seen a Saturn V leave for the moon with 7.5 million pounds of thrust, I mean, we were anchored something like 6 or 7 miles offshore, and it was absolutely spectacular. Well, if you go to our Facebook page, there's a link there to the YouTube of the doc that was done on the voyage beyond Apollo by K-Dub of Belgab. And I've been, you know, in between getting ready for the show, I've been kind of dipping in and out and looking at bits and pieces. And boy, that looked like an interesting cruise. It's amazing the things, the little things you forget after a few years. And, you know, if you want to send us a note on it, what you think of it, if you'd like maybe a better copy. I don't know who put the copy up there. It may have been the actual producers. But it is obviously several generations down the line from a pristine print. So who knows? Maybe we could actually reach out to the producers and they could get us a better copy. I mean, we had a couple of production crews on board, you know, in the old NASA idiom, which I was brought up in professionally, no single point failure. But when we got back, you know, we didn't have the amazing distribution channels for video and television and media that we have now. We had three networks. And this was done by a Canadian crew, so it may have actually aired in Canada on the CBC and not here. I don't remember, you know, offhand right now. But in those days, you know, it was very hard to see television that was, shall we say, less than broad mainstream audience appeal, millions and millions and millions of people. So I frankly never knew where this was aired, if it ever was picked up by television, or whether it aired locally or it aired on, as I said, the CBC. So it's frankly quite a nice surprise, serendipitous, for K-Dub to have found it and sent it. And so tonight, everyone who wants to can click over on my Facebook page, and you'll see this link to the Voyage Beyond Apollo in 1972 with a stellar crew. I mean, just watching the faces as the camera pans across who we had. We had Carl Sagan, we had Isaac Asimov, of course, we had Fred Pohl, we had Norman Mailer, we had, I'm trying to think, was Catherine Ann Porter on that trip or another trip? Because I also chased a comet with the QE2 once when I was at the Hayden Planetarium, and that was recorded on film, and that's probably, you know, bouncing around out there somewhere on YouTube. I guess maybe if anybody's ever shot film of anything going on the planet, somewhere you can find it, if you're really, really good, on YouTube. So go over and watch The Voyage Beyond Apollo. It brings back so many interesting memories of an extraordinary trip. And in fact, I think that it is a record of people of some caliber and some insight having a conversation about the meaning of the NASA program to go to the moon and beyond. For one and maybe the only time in the history of Apollo that I can remember. I know there was a conclave brought together at Caltech by JPL some years ago around some of the Mariner missions to Mars, but I don't believe that anybody but us put together something like this at sea and recorded it, and it's really intriguing. There actually is a kind of a semi-debate between Sagan and Marvin Minsky, who was the professor of artificial intelligence at MIT I forget who else. Anyway, there was this debate between Norman Mailer and those guys, with those guys taking the position that spaceflight would open up, you know, humanity's options, would give us opportunities to do things that we cannot do any other way, would in essence rescue the planet. This is back in 1976, and of course those words now are incredibly prophetic. And then you have Norman Mailer on the other side, who I did not realize when I invited him that he was really opposed to the idea of us reaching out into space. He thought it was human hubris, and we had so many things here to solve before we could extend our egos and our personas out into, you know, the universe, as he put it. And he spent a lot of the time on the ship talking about one of his new ideas, which was the thanatosphere. And I won't go into the thanatosphere tonight, but if you want to send me an email and are interested, I will at some point. Anyway, that's a couple of interesting items over on Facebook, and we have our YouTube presence. Let me go back just one here and check out one more thing. And the Other Side of Midnight Facebook page as well. Okay, tonight is open lines. So let me give out the numbers and the ways you can get to us. It's, if you're on Skype, Enterprise Mission, just Enterprise Mission, all one word, run together. Or if you're on a phone, hopefully it's a good phone, 505-796-8802, 505-796-8802. And before, you know, everybody jams up the lines, I do want to say a couple of things about the debate. Everybody, obviously, I mean, who else in the country was doing anything interesting other than the debate? And to me, again, I don't want to get down in the weeds in terms of specific policies. You know, we can touch on some things if they kind of, you know, rub my fur the wrong way, but I really don't want to have the standard traditional political debate. I want to look at this process, this extraordinary, unusual, fascinating process, which is going on both on the Republican side and the Democratic side. Because as all the pundits have been telling us now for a very long time, they've never seen anything like this, and I haven't seen anything like this, and it just seems to me that there is something different happening. As you know, our hyperdimensional model for physics and consciousness and changing awareness and all that kind of predicts that there should be this unusual changing perception or changing attitude or changing in involvement. And in fact, there certainly is. I think CNN broke any of its records for viewership tonight in terms of politics, which is to be expected because everybody expected there would be some kind of food fight. But in fact, we seem to be watching a process which is in the process of making insiders outsiders and outsiders insiders. And on that note, we have a call, so let me go to the phones, and we'll see who is on the air. Good morning. You're on the Other Side of Midnight.
Hey, Richard. This is Matt out in Denver.
Hi, Matt. Actually, you're kind of. I think you're north of us, directly north.
Yeah, I am actually. You're in the state right below me, right?
Yep, New Mexico, just outside Albuquerque.
Has that nasty water played any kind of effect for you guys from that blowout?
No, not really. Thank goodness.
That's good. I wanted to call about the debate tonight.
Okay.
I watched both. I even watched the B team debate.
Oh, I was kind of under the weather all day, so I didn't get to watch the kids' table.
You're lucky. I wish I would have done the same thing. I would have rather been sick.
Uh-oh.
I almost got sick by listening to some of the answers to the questions. I mean, you can only listen to Rick Santorum for so long before you just want to puke. But that's just my biased opinion, of course.
Yeah, why don't you tell us how you really feel?
Well, where do we start, Rich? Well, I mean, come on. We live in the 20th century, and we don't have to have somebody trying to rule us with some Middle Earth kind of ridiculous religious kind of beliefs. You know what I mean?
Well, look, we live in a republic, And one of the cornerstones of the Republic is freedom of religion.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean
freedom of religion as well.
But it does not mean we are at all open to a theocracy. What I find fascinating is that some of these candidates who hold very strong religious views, they are very antagonistic and very down on Muslims, you know, countries that are run by theocracies, and yet they would turn around and run us the same way, apparently not self-aware enough to realize that what they're proposing is as bad for the United States as if we had Sharia law, or, you know, which
exactly.
Is
look at that lady down there in Kentucky. Prime example. When you see them all crowding around her saying, oh my gosh, yeah, she broke the law, but she was doing it for a good reason, for religious reasons. And you're like, well, I thought you guys were always stating, you know, this person broke the law. Isn't that what we heard when any kind of thing that happened, that there wasn't any kind of controversy behind it? It was always that, well, this person should have followed those rules. They shouldn't have broken the law. And then all of a sudden they make up new rules because, well, you know, this is the Christian right's going to go ahead and give them a bunch of money, so they got to placate to them, rather than just using their head and kind of seeing it both ways and saying, hey, we kind of made a line in the sand, and we got to stay on this side of it. But, I mean, what do we expect? Hypocrisy in politics, you know?
Well, what I'm intrigued with is that there seems to be a kind of an amnesia when it comes to the concepts around the founding of the nation, the founding fathers, particularly Jefferson. There's a reason why we have separation of church and state. It's because we had awful experiences, those of us who immigrated, our great-great-grandparents immigrated to this country and set up the United States. We had tremendous problems with religious tyranny against religious groups, specific religious groups, you know, the Quakers or whatever, in the old country. So we came to a new country and we evolved very quickly from the idea of religious colonies into the idea of 13 colonies that separated religion from the populace so that you can practice any religion you want or none if you want. What I'm always intrigued with is how religious people who want to convert you, don't really allow for God in the equation. In other words, if I'm an atheist or I'm, rabidly anti-Christian, isn't that ultimately between me and God? Why should another human being be in a position to judge my behavior if it doesn't interact with the rights of another individual?
Exactly.
And the same, and I'm going to get myself in trouble tonight, the same, I think, goes for abortion. Abortion is awful, but that's between the woman who is having the abortion and her God.
Yeah. Really.
Why does anybody else get the right? Certainly
it's
a politician.
It's the same with gay marriage. Like, if you really think about it, like, really, you're all up in arms in this? Like,
in other words, sin is a personal, private matter. It's between you and God. And why? What gives anybody else the right to tell me I'm a sinner and I'm going to go to hell for what I'm doing if what I'm doing is not affecting them?
Yeah, exactly. And it's within the laws, too.
Well, that we have laws.
You know what I mean? You're really not affecting them.
Well, yeah.
But they just don't like it because that's something, you know, that they wouldn't do. And they wouldn't want that in, you know, their family, let alone their community. When in reality, it's none of their business.
Well, again, I'm looking at this from through the wrong end of a telescope, you know, through the objective, down through the IP. So everything is really, really tiny and distant, and I can see all this landscape. I find it interesting that now we're finding this resurgence of religious political thought, kind of, you know, correct think.
Yeah.
And this comes in waves, and I'm trying to look at this in terms of the hyperdimensional model, where, you remember, the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse. In this sense, the definition to me of worse is when someone tries to intrude on my freedom because their calling to God or their godliness or their relationship somehow is threatened by behavior that actually has nothing to do with that relationship.
Well, I agree, Richard. I mean, that's simply, you know, you hit the nail right on the head. And I do agree that the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse because there is that giant divide. it seems that, you know, and you even stated before, that back when you were young, both sides would go ahead and try to work with one another. They'd reach agreements. They'd compromise. And, you know, you would have that kind of thing. There wouldn't be as much turmoil. And now it's more of a divide. And I really think that, you know, the Christian right really has, like, a minority, and it's shrinking because a lot of the younger people are growing up and kind of pushing themselves away from that. And so now they're just really digging their heels into the dirt and trying to hold on to whatever they possibly can.
Or the physics, the field, whatever you want to call, is appropriate for more expansive thinking by people who are open to expansive thinking, and those fearful people who feel they have to control other people in order to control themselves, they in fact are a reducing minority just by the natural process of the physics of consciousness, whatever that is.
Okay, yeah, similar to like over in Europe, right? Old countries, they, you know, became more and more secular as a whole, if you really want to look at it, and it became that way over time. I think that that's kind of the way people are moving in now. I don't think that the code of that, oh, well, you need religion to go ahead and teach morals, I personally don't buy into that, because I think you learn moral things by just human experience. Like, you wouldn't want something being done to you, so you wouldn't want to do it to somebody else. That's what a normal person would think. Then, well, again, you have your sociopaths.
The good old golden rule.
Whatnot. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I've got tons of people stacked up over Idlewild.
I'll let you go, Richard, but thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you. Okay, let's see who else is here. All right, here we are. Good morning, you're on the air. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Oh, hello, my name is Paul.
Oh, you're much too loud. Back off your mic.
Oh, sorry about that, Richard.
Bad, my ears.
Is this a lot better now?
Much better, much better.
My apologies. My name is Paul. I'm actually calling from Ontario, Canada, so I hope you don't mind if you get a little bit of a political observation from your neighbor up in the north.
Absolutely not. Go for it.
First off, I just wanted to mention something was tickling in the back of my brain when you mentioned religious persecution and the original founding colonists coming. It's interesting to note that you mention sort of they were kicked out or forced to flee due to their religious beliefs, when actually it was the Puritans that were trying to enforce their belief system onto the Anglican Church and onto the Roman Catholic Church. They didn't believe in separatism. They practiced a form
of... Now, wait. Are you talking in Europe, or are you talking when they came here?
Both, more or less. The Puritans from England, who came on the Mayflower.
But the Puritans were a minority in England.
They were. Okay. They were, but they were a very fanatical, very aesthetically deep, in the sense that they tried to deny all earthly pleasure, all worship should be for God only. And while the English, they didn't really go along with that, and that's sort of why they were kicked out. But I digress. That's a minor point.
No. It's a very important point, because you'll remember in my little memo a few moments ago, I said, and when they came here, they evolved. Because when they came here, they set up a tyrannical theocracy, exactly as you've described. And the citizenry of that theocracy basically got fed up. They kicked out the old crowd. They put in a new crowd, and they evolved into the United States that I used to know, which is we respect other people's religions, their point of view, but we do not allow religion to dictate the political direction of what I call the commons. They
Absolutely.
Evolved into the condition which is freedom for all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough. The point that I really wanted to discuss, though, was the recent debate and just how American debates and these candidacies seem to be run from the point of view of a country where we have strict federal limits on our election budgets. Mm-hmm. In terms of corporations, entire corporations, they're only allowed to donate to one political party a maximum of $1,000. Doesn't matter if it's Walmart or if it's your local laundromat down the street. Same with citizens. You're only allowed to donate up to a maximum of $1,000. This keeps our election campaigns up here rather boring and dry compared to the multi-billion dollar propaganda machine that you guys have down in the States.
How are television appearances by candidates handled? Because that's why all this money has to be raised for U.S. markets, because television, there used to be, when I began in radio, which was decades and decades and decades ago, and then I left and I did a lot of other things, and here I am again. What I was intrigued with was watching the reaction of the station manager every fall. Because in the fall, you know, we had local elections, we had state elections, and then every 4 years you had, you know, national elections, and every 2 years you have congressional elections. The manager was so excited come election time because they made out like bandits. They charged everybody as much as the traffic would bear, and that has now gotten totally out of hand to where the coming campaign is probably going to be in excess of maybe $6 to $8 billion with a B. Down here in the United States, and there's nobody, except if you're a Bush or you're a Clinton or you're someone connected, that can raise that level of money. And most of it is for television, and most of it, Bernie Sanders notwithstanding, is for television that's going to viciously attack the other guy or the other guys or the other gals or whatever. So how do you handle exposure of candidates on television without breaking the piggy bank up there?
It's actually rather interesting you mention that, because we've sort of been having our debates almost parallel to the American debates. I have no idea why that is. Maybe the government's trying to test who Canadians really pay attention to.
Well, do you have elections coming up soon?
Yes, actually, we've had snap elections that should be happening around October. This will be our fifth election cycle in about 4 or 5 years.
Oh my God!
Our government's been rather election happy.
So, you have a parliamentary system where you can call an election whenever enough people are fed up with what's been going on.
More or less, yes. We've taken that from the United Kingdom. But what I wanted to focus on was yes, the money amounts and what is actually happening during the spectacle. Because in what I can't really describe what happens up here as a spectacle. A bunch of extremely dry people who don't believe what's coming out of their mouths get into a room, sort of like a press conference, and then they spout their platform and their policy very dryly. Very calmly, without any insults or any clapping, debate their points, and then the debate is over. But when I watch a United States debate, it's fascinating how much time is spent on focusing cameras over all the commentators, each one of them a celebrity in their own right. Every single one of the candidates has to be absolutely perfect in their standing. Everything is absolutely rehearsed, down to who's going to have the nervous tick on the knee, and very little policy, in my opinion, actually seems to get discussed. We're in a very, very serious time now with the massive refugee crisis in Europe, and the debt ceiling just continuing to get kicked down the road for both Canada and the United States. But very little policy seems to get discussed in these massive stadium-wide debates.
I'll tell you what, hold it there. I want to do something before the break, and then I want to have you come back because I have a very important question to ask.
Sure,
so,
no problem.
So let me tell everybody. We had a contribution the other night from a composer, a young composer named Bob Bright. I'm kind of pulling Bob's leg here a bit. And I played it on the air, and the mix wasn't quite optimum. So I said something, and Bob went back to the studio and remixed it. And so we're going to go into this break with Bob Bright's fascinating original composition, The Other Side of Midnight. We'll be right back.
Side of midnight, if you really listen hard, you can hear what the universe is saying. Time
we are back. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and you were in the middle of a thought about contrasting the Canadian elections and our elections. Hello? Oh, sorry.
Oh, no trouble at all.
There you are. There you are.
So I suppose, just very quickly, for those who are just tuning in, I'm a Canadian calling in, Paul from Ontario, and yeah, we were discussing the contrast between the multi-billion dollar American propaganda machine of what is the American elections and the very humble penny-pinching Canadian elections.
So how would you recommend in correcting ours so that we actually get information out as opposed to basically media, television, no, film, the persona as opposed to content?
Oh, thanks for reminding me that. That's kind of the whole reason why I called, actually, was to mention a sort of recommendation.
See, I knew it was there somewhere. Go for it.
Oh, we finally got there. Thanks, Richard. My recommendation would be, I don't know if it would actually really work considering the population difference. I think America, the United States, is up to, what, 350 million people now, or 300 million people?
330, I think.
So nearly 10 times your hat's population up north here. I would actually say limit the amount of campaign contributions that come from corporations, limited license companies. I don't know exactly
when that rule was abolished. You are aware of Citizens United, right?
I do believe so, but give me a quick overview again.
This is the Supreme Court verdict on the idea that corporations are people.
They have the ability to
give, you know, basically unlimited monies if it's done in a certain technical way. So, yeah, I kind of agree with you that what we really need is publicly funded campaigns so that everybody has a voice, but everybody's voice is equal. I mean, the idea that a corporate, let's say Donald Trump. Donald Trump is running. He's got $10 billion. He is self-financing. The idea of a world where billionaires get to decide who's going to run and decide who can be elected, and the rest of us, you know, there's no possible way that an individual contribution can compete with a guy that's got $10 billion and change.
Well, that's the world we're living in now.
Unless we change it.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to let some other folks in. I really thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much for having me on, Richard.
Well, I think your suggestion is excellent. It's kind of like the old joke about, okay, we all agree now we have to put the bell on the cat. These are all the mice, right? Mm. Who's going to be the guy to go and put the bell on the cat?
Absolutely. The messenger will definitely get shot, whoever tries to suggest
very, very, very quick on their feet.
All right. Thank you very much, Richard. Have yourself a good night. Excellent show. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Okay, let's go to Scott, who is...
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
And
are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good, good. I thought,
do not go near the water, by the way, Scott.
No, I'm several miles inland and up on a big hill, so I should be okay.
What do the local people, weather people, say about this out there?
Well, between... watching the debate and catching up on some other stuff, I have not watched the evening news, the 11 o'clock news yet.
The one night you should watch the evening news and you don't. Okay.
Well, the wave could be headed right toward Sheikh Guru at this moment as we speak, and I would be blissfully unaware, you know. Hmm. So, but anyway, I'm hoping for the best.
Okay.
I got a couple of things, political and otherwise. One of them, and I sent this to you via email, but I thought the listeners might enjoy it. The other night, just for fun, I ran Trump's campaign slogan, "Make America Great Again."
Yeah, I remember you sent me that.
Okay, but the listeners have not heard this, so I thought they'd enjoy it. Anyway, I ran his slogan, "Make America Great Again," through an anagram generator. And it came up with a rather telling anagram, gain rage, emaciate karma, which I thought was priceless.
Pretty intriguing, you know.
Yeah.
See, I would say that that's a classic example of HD resonance.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody planned that, but it kind of turns out that way.
Yeah, I wish I could remember the one from McCain Palin. I did the same thing with their campaign slogan. I think it was America First, and it came up with a brilliant anagram that was the exact opposite. And earlier, you were talking with the Canadian caller about Citizens United. Isn't it ironic that PAC groups, political action groups like Citizens United and some other right-wing groups, the sole function of Citizens United is to divide all of us.
Mm.
That seems rather odd. You know, again, maybe it's that resonance thing going on.
Well, you know, to me, it's almost pathological that we have this real concern we're going to slip into socialism. We're in socialism, folks.
Yeah.
What's Medicare? What's Social Security? Come on, let's become adults. The idea.
The Veterans Administration is totally government run.
And it's awful lousy health care for an awful lot of veterans. That notwithstanding, that's management. That's just management. Somebody's not, as Trump says, somebody's not paying attention, and that's management. But the bigger picture is, as long as campaigns are financed by the guy with the deepest pockets, you're going to get exactly the kind of election you can imagine from the guy with the deepest pockets. They have the loudest voice. They have they have the agenda. They can buy all the opposition. They basically own the election. So when are we going to get smart and realize that we should have public financing to where it's a level playing field, and the voices and the intelligence or non-intelligence behind the voices gets heard in a way that is just not possible now?
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned Social Security and Medicare. It's funny you bring that up. That was actually the main reason I was calling regarding the debate. I guess it doesn't surprise me that the topic never came up. But back in January, the very first thing that one of the first things that the Republican Congress did was to create a situation where in about 18 months or so, maybe a little longer, the income of disabled people, all 11 million of us who are relying on Medicare and Social Security, will be diminished by 20%. Hmm. And it kind of went under the radar across the news media, but I heard about it right away because I'm one of those 11 million. And it's a little scary. Everybody in your head, or whip out a calculator and do the math. If you woke up one morning in the not too distant future, and your income was diminished by 1/5, by 20%,
that's catastrophic for most people.
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially those of us who depend solely upon Medicare Social Security for our income. And here's the deal: it's a pointless exercise. Simply because what they did was, for years there was a tradition in Congresses run by Democrats or Republicans and presidents, or either Democrat or Republican, that the two funds that fund Medicare for retired folks and Social Security for retired folks and Social Security for disabled folks, those funding mechanisms sometimes would run short. And it was a matter of just ordinariness that if one fund went a little short, money would shift over from the opposite fund.
Kind of like flying in an airplane where you have wing tanks and you have spare tanks, and then you switch between the tanks.
Exactly. And for decades, in Democratic or Republican administrations and Congresses, it was a routine thing that they did to help a temporary shortfall. Well, the Republicans in the first part of January decided, well, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to disallow that practice. And what that means is by, I think, September or October of next year, disabled people, the funds will not be there, so everybody gets an automatic 20% cut in their income, which is nonsense.
And which candidates are talking about this?
Well, none of them, and that's just the thing.
Not even Bernie or Hillary or any of the folks on the Democratic
Bernie
side?
Bernie is. Okay. I don't know about Ms. Clinton, but here's the deal. 11 million people, which comprises the number of disabled people receiving Social Security, is not an inconsequential number of people.
I should say so.
And you would think that even the Republicans, you would think, who a lot of them still believe in a safety net, would say something about this. But, you know, it's lost in the Trump effect.
Hmm.
You know, all important things get lost because we're focused on Donald. So I don't know. I just thought I'd get that out there because a lot of people, even now, lo, these 9 months later, are not aware of it.
Well, I have to tell you, Scott, I wasn't aware of it.
Well, then I have served a good purpose.
You have definitely served a public purpose. Okay.
Okay, man. Take care. Have a good night.
You too. Okay, our numbers here, 505-796-8802 and Enterprise Mission if you're on Skype. Scott brought up something else that was interesting about the debate, and that is, to me, it's intriguing that Carson – Ben Carson, who, by the way, I thought comported himself tonight in the debate much, much better than he had in the first debate. This is an intriguing guy. I mean, he's made some statements on the record that are, shall we say, out there. I mean, really out there. And everyone in the mainstream, in terms of punditry, has been wondering for a long time, you know, months now, why he's rising in the polls, where his constituency is, why there appears to be a real groundswell to move him up. You know, now he's what, number two to Trump in the let's see, that's, well, actually in both Iowa and in New Hampshire. And then the question is, well, what is Ben Carson's platform? What are the things that he would like to do? One of the things that I wanted to bring up tonight was the possibility that if Ben Carson was elected as president, let's just imagine for a minute that he was, that the whole ET question would have to be viewed through his very religious lens. And he's made a lot of statements on the record that frankly raise questions in my mind regarding his positioning vis-a-vis extraterrestrial realities, the idea that there's folks out there, the idea that we have a more ancient history with them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just kind of think about that. We're going to go to our next call. This is Lewis. You're calling from where?
Rancho Cucamonga, California. But I'm pretty far inland.
Thank goodness, Lewis. Yeah. Thank goodness. Okay.
So I'm not aware of – it's not even raining here, so I'm not aware of any changes in the weather.
Well, if you have an earthquake, remember, tsunamis are in the ocean so that the waves are moving up the coast regardless of what's going on topside. So,
good point. Yeah. For some reason, I expected there to be rain as well, but you're right. The reason I'm calling is a little while ago, you and I had discussed – as you say, a reference calls relativistic properties of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And you had responded in an email saying that you'd call that hyperdimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And that you had also said that the Sitchin focus on gold is misplaced because we can make this stuff. And that's a capital M, capital A, capital K, capital E by the gigantons. Gigantons?
No.
Okay.
No. I said we can make it by the gigaton.
That's it.
A gigaton is a billion tons. If you have access to the ether, if you have access to manipulating the torsion field, there were experiments carried out by my late friend Gene Maloff, who had three PhDs in physics from MIT, and he ran a energy research foundation in New Hampshire, as well as publishing Infinite Energy magazine. And they actually ran experiments, and there's even some folks now up there by the interesting name Quantum Rabbit, who have demonstrated in small laboratory settings at normal temperatures that they can create elements right out of the ether. Bingo. Transmute and create. So if you have a mature technology, if you're a Type 2 civilization, you do not need to mine anything. You can make it out of the torsion field. So the idea of Sitchin, that somebody came here to mine the gold and made us slaves to mine the gold, does not comport with the capabilities of such an advanced extraterrestrial civilization. However, if in fact a culture had a ship that got lost or stranded or, you know, crashed here, and the survivors are literally... I mean, in a plane crash, an average plane crash, if you survive, you know, think of the TV series Lost.
Right.
How many of those people knew almost anything about how to survive in their environment.
I think one guy, basically.
One or two, okay.
Yeah.
So if you're on an advanced interstellar cruiser and you're either, you know, on vacation or you're whatever and you get stranded on the Earth, the odds are that you're not going to know how to fix anything that breaks. You're certainly not going to know how to make it, you know, in terms of replicate it or to make more copies or to extend your technological basis. When the machines die, you die, unless you really understand how to live off the land. In those circumstances where ETs came here and were stranded as refugees, I can imagine a scenario where, yeah, you would try to find gold and mine it, because gold has these remarkable, unique HD torsion field properties. But I don't envision the scenario that Sitchin was kind of enchanted with, which is they needed it to do something with their atmosphere back on their home planet, which he called Nibiru.
And what is a torsion field and what is hyperdimensional? And I wanted to say, great show last night on Asimov. What is a torsion field and what's hyperdimensional?
Okay. The torsion field is the ether and the ether is a torsion field. The only reason it's called a torsion field is because the Russians measured that there is rotation in the ether. It spins. It has vortices. And a spin is a torque, and a torque is a torsion. So it's a torsion field, means it's spinning in vortices around us invisibly. The hyperdimensional part, simply, hyper means higher. Dimensional means higher dimension. So hyperdimensional physics is the physics of the interaction of higher dimensions with our dimension through the torsion field.
And I thought gigatons was a machine. So
no, no. Well, you know, hydrogen bombs are hydrogen bombs back during the nuclear era. You know, 45.
Right.
You know, kilotons, megatons.
I see.
Gigatons.
Right.
It's a kind of a shorthand.
And like I said, a very interesting, enjoyable show last night. I also read Asimov when I was much, much younger, and I still remember the Foundation trilogy. So
I
enjoyed your guests.
I think the Foundation trilogy is a seminal work that everybody should go out and read. I have intel people, you know, deep on the inside who kind of leak me stuff from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I started a couple of years ago telling them, for God's sake, go read the Foundation trilogy. That's what I think might be going on. And they went and they did it, and they came back to me and they said, you may have something.
I'll have to go back and read it.
I mean, it's both enjoyable and extraordinarily instructive for the point in history where we are now, if my model is correct.
And is Donald Trump going to win the Republican nomination?
Who knows?
Okay,
I don't know.
You don't.
What I like about the Trump candidacy is he's raising all the issues that nobody else was talking about until he got into the race.
Yeah.
And I actually think that this little thing between him and Carly Fiorina is arranged.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they're looking
Trump is too smart not to know that if you're sitting on your airplane with a reporter for Rolling Stone,
you do not
look at television and say, oh, look at that face, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What he did, I think, and of course I can't check this yet, I think he did that deliberately to give Carly a huge leg up in the media, because anything Trump mentions gets attention. She got into the debates tonight. She did a damn good job, and she scared the bejesus out of me. I do not want to go back to the Cold War. Thank you, Carly. But
I didn't care for the finger waving.
I will defend your right to have an opinion, to defend your track record, to do all the other things candidates are doing, and to be at the, you know, adult table as opposed to the kids table. And I will predict, I'll make one prediction tonight, that because of the attention that Trump directed to her, I think with full consciousness, not by accident, he put her in the field where ultimately, if he is nominated, again, I predicted weeks and weeks ago that it was going to be Trump and Fiorina as the, you know, presidential and vice presidential candidates, because they represent the outside business interests, the non-political business interests, the folks that have done stuff. And you can argue with what they've done or not done, but they've done stuff. And It represents the male and female in this coming cycle, which again, from the physics perspective, I think it's essential that there be a female woman candidate on both sides in the field. And I'm looking at a secret little under-the-table handshake because it's just too cute the way he set her up. She did this ad. She comes back with one-liners. She's going to be the headline all tomorrow is Carly Fiorina. And you watch. She will jump in percentage points. And the guy who loses, because those limited, you know, 100%, you got to divide up 100% into whatever right. It is. The folks that are going to lose are going to be more of the insiders, but not Trump.
You know, that's exactly where I thought you were heading. That is essentially, it might be a good ploy to really defang George or Bush.
Jeb.
Yeah,
Jeb. Poor Bush. Jeb. I'm beginning to feel sorry for Jeb.
Well, I liked him more than his brother, but that's not saying much.
I'm feeling sorry for Jeb.
Carly, I mean, that's setting her up to get all the secondary attention.
Yes.
Jeb won't get squat. And
it was brilliant. I think it was masterfully, if I can say this correctly, maneuvered by Trump. Because, look, what guy with his background and expertise on a plane with a reporter is going to open his mouth and say something as stupid as that unless he had a plan?
Well, that's really insightful and shrewd if he actually did that. And he's not just so dumb.
Well, did you see how they interacted on stage? Even when she was counterpointing, you know. There was no angst. There was no emotion.
Yeah.
It was like
no animosity.
It was like it was a script.
Interesting. Boy, yeah, that's a very good point, Richard. I'll give you that.
Just my 2 cents.
All right. Yep. Well, thank you for your. I have some more questions, but I don't want to dominate your show once again.
Well,
so
we
I'll
actually
call it another night.
No. Okay? We have a lull. You know, people are listening. They're not calling in.
Well, you know, I want more definitions out of you, and you used another phrase, and I wanted to ask you what the definition was, and I'm sorry I've forgotten that already. It was subsequent. I have to think about it. It wasn't hyperdimensional. Oh, the physics of it. So you're taking from Asimov this notion that physics can be applied to human interaction, I'm taking. That's your twist. He didn't use the word physics. He used other psychosocial measurements. But you're saying, what is the physics? When you say the physics of the election, whether a man and a woman are going to be on the ticket or
tickets. Let's talk about energy. Let's talk about frequencies. Let's talk about resonance and dissonance and all that. Think of waves. You know, the tsunami coming up the coast tonight is a very interesting two-dimensional example of waves moving the way waves move. With waves, you get reinforcement, so you get bigger waves, or you can get destructive interference to where you cancel the waves and you get nothing, right?
Right.
If consciousness is interacting with the field, and we have individual consciousness, but we also have something bigger, which is we're entities that have an identity beyond who we are. We have male and female, right?
Okay.
That can be expressed ultimately someday. Somebody somewhere will write an equation to describe this in terms of the interaction of individuals with the torsion field, and they'll be able to actually classify, like science has classified so many other phenomenologies, in terms of similarities, differences, identities, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just looking at this and saying, okay, if this physics actually is real, and if consciousness interacts with it, and it's amplifying certain attributes of consciousness, you know, the good are getting better and the bad are getting worse, it also is amplifying the other individual attributes like femaleness or maleness. And then I'm looking at the ritualists, the folks behind the scene that are doing all these strange secret society mystery school rituals that we've been tracking for years, like NASA and other agencies and other private groups and all that.
And you kind of referenced that last night with the huge migration. You were suggesting someone is manipulating that, but I interrupted.
Well, no, it's a very good thing to bring up. Now, what that is, that creates a huge amount of noise in this process. It's in some sense, it's kind of a big distraction. But it also represents a huge negative in the force, in the consciousness field. And what I was telling Tim was, I would think that huge negativity, if you're looking at it from waveforms, has to be balanced ultimately, like, you know, the conservation of energy,
right,
with an equal big positive bump. And you can imagine the anguish and terror and fear of 4 million people fleeing for their lives and thousands upon thousands drowning and everybody seeing this on television or hearing it from friends or hearing it because some you actually know families or somebody who was killed in that awful mechanism of getting from out of the Middle East and into Europe where they think they're going to have safety. That huge negative bang in the ether, in the torsion field, I think has to be balanced by something equally positive. And I think this big event a lot of people have been sensing coming at us is going to be something really astonishingly Trump-like. The biggest, the most magnificent, the hugest. It's got to be something huge and positive. And the thing that I'm looking at that is big enough to torque everybody's attention that would be positive would be if it's finally admitted and if the Pope is part of the process that we are not alone.
You know, I think most people are – what I was getting was that most people are thinking this big thing that's going to happen will be negative.
I know, so because they don't know how to analyze the physics.
Fair enough.
They're just sensing something. Because we're all primed now because of news. I mean, just look at the world through the, you know, mainstream news. It's an awful, awful picture. There's nothing bright out there.
Like your previous caller said, 20% cut. And the compensation or whatever, the pay to disabled. My God.
That's absolutely atrocious.
It's unconscionable.
It's evil. It's immoral.
And I was not aware of it either.
No. So tonight we've done something big. You know, we have – look, we now live in the digital age where if you tell two friends and they tell two friends and they tell two friends, suddenly it can be around the world, you know, by the other side of midnight. I want people to spread that word that there is a plan to reduce for the disabled by 20% their disability, and it's unconscionable that that should go forward. Unconscionable.
And getting to earthquakes, what's the likelihood of an earthquake in Chile?
Well, we've had plenty, many. Remember, you have the Andes, you have active tectonics, you've got volcanoes, you've got stuff coming up. Now, it may be on increasing frequency because
the physics changes
also affect the planet.
And will it lead to California, where I happen to be? I mean, do you think it could be interconnected so that there's one large one in Chile and then that could rock the world a bit and cause earthquakes elsewhere?
The simple answer is I don't know. The more complex answer is we should look into it.
Right.
The long-term answer is if the energy, using that term, is triggering things in the southern hemisphere, there should also be interesting triggering of things in the northern hemisphere. And you just have to watch. I don't see anything in California that is on the verge of going, you know, bust or boom, except maybe, of course, San Andreas' fault.
That's what I meant.
So let's keep a nice, calm vision that nothing's going to happen to the San Andreas' fault, okay?
And you know your guest, the female guest you had on last night, Amy?
She actually
read the new, or at least a news segment tonight on Art Show.
She's part of Dark Matter News.
News to me.
It was news to me until I found out by talking to Amy.
And I hope if I may say so, I have another friend of mine who I know from the internet named Kevin, who happens to be blind, and he very often listens to your show.
Yeah, he's up in Colorado, isn't he?
You're right. Good memory. I hope he calls in and tells us about the disability issue.
Yes, that'd be an excellent person to hear from.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Okay.
Good night.
You have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Okay, we are going to go to break. It is at the top of the hour. It's let's try this. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we'll be right back. And good morning once again. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and you are on the other side of midnight. We have another call. If you would turn down your digital device, tell us your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Barto, and I'm calling from Texas.
Oh, my favorite place, Texas. That's where Houston is.
Right. Well, the
Houston,
reason
we have a problem. Go ahead.
Well, the reason I was calling, and it was originally brought up on Art Bell, that some people in Alaska said that the stars were changing and the sun was tracking in a different way and it was causing problems. Well, here in Texas, I'm in Fort Worth, and when I was a Boy Scout, I went out my front yard, and my house points directly north.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was messing with a compass about a month ago, and when I aimed it, it's about 2 degrees to the east.
Okay.
And I said, that's kind of strange. That's over 50 years.
Not strange at all. No. That's not strange at all. The Earth's magnetic poles move. You knew that, right?
Right. I knew they did some.
Oh, they move
and
a lot.
My neighbor noticed his flower beds used to be all in the shade, and half of them are in the sun now.
No, that's not true. No, hang on. No. That cannot be. That cannot be, and I can tell you absolutely, unless Texas has become another planet, which I know there are folks that think it is already. I am an astronomer. I live in this extraordinary land of enchantment. When I take Morale out for walks, when I go out myself, you know, morning, noon, and night, various times, I look at the stars, look at the moon, look where the sun is setting. I can actually see the sunset as we go up the hill and down the hill on the north and south side of a very large butte way to the west of us called Cabazon. And I've actually marked it like the ancient Anasazi would kind of mark the seasons by where the sun sets. And it used to set just behind Cabazon at the solstice, which was June 21. And now it is far south, tracking south to where it will, you know, end up at the midwinter solstice on December 21. Then it will turn around and go back along the horizon, back toward Cabazon, going north each day, a little bit further, a little bit further. I've had lots of people, including friends, who called me reporting these weird risings and settings of things. And I frankly don't see it. Now, how do we reconcile honest people reporting totally different things? I have a possible solution to the mystery. We have a secret space program out there. It's not acknowledged. Nobody talks about it. But there's some folks running around with some extraordinary vehicles using this torsion field technology to both negate gravity, and they have created weapons that are literally incomprehensible to us mortals, the folks that, you know, think a nuclear weapon is the biggest thing we've ever built. If those weapons are used, and there is some kind of a conflict going on in the solar system between our secret space program and the guys out there, the breakaway civilization a la Richard Dolan, who basically want to keep us on Earth and they don't want anybody out there, and they're basically trying to keep us in quarantine. Well, the conflict in this secret war, the secret space war that's been going on now for at least since 9/11, is such that if you fire one of these weapons into the atmosphere, it winds up inflating the atmosphere into a huge bubble. And the bubble is like a lens. So what
it
temporarily moves by refraction stars, the moon, the sun, everything relative to where it normally should exist if we didn't have an atmosphere or the atmosphere wasn't being played with. And then it will go back to normal. So the following morning, things will look like they did 3 days ago or 2 days ago or whatever. But the idea of permanent changes in the geometry of where the sun rises or sets, or where stars rise or set, or the moon rises and sets, that simply cannot have happened, because if that happened, then we would notice it all over the world, and I notice nothing different in the sky I'm looking at that I've been looking at for 70 years than I have.
Right, and when I was mentioning that on the compass, I don't know.
Compass is different. Compass is different from looking at the sky optically with your eyes. The compass is responding to the magnetic pole shift, the magnetic lines of force, It's a magnetic phenomenon, so it has nothing to do with where things rise or set optically.
Right, and different times of the year, things are going to be in different places, too.
Well, because of the way the Earth is tilted, just by good old geometry, and you can go to any YouTube video to show the Earth going around the sun, the tilt of the Earth, 23.5 degrees, how the rising and setting changes. There's all kinds of wonderful animations now, so you get to see this in simulation. But the magnetic effects that you're recording on the compass are completely separate from the optical anomalies that, for instance, there are folks in Alaska, Eskimos that I know, who are, I mean, they know the stars. They've been living with the stars forever because the stars are their livelihood. Without the stars, they don't have seasons. Without seasons, they can't fish. They don't know when the ice is going to break and all that kind of stuff. So they watch the sky really carefully. And some of them, in villages up far north, have been reporting anomalous risings and settings of celestial objects. And that's because I think something is doing something to the atmosphere locally there that temporarily changes the setting and rising points through refraction of the Earth's atmosphere in this disturbed artificial condition.
Right, that would make sense. I wanted to ask you also, when that other station that you used to be on with reports from
You mean the Premier Radio Network's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie? You mean that station, that channel, that network?
That one.
What about it?
Every now and then they would have a gentleman called Jim McCanny.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's
I know Jim.
And he looks at the sun, sunspots, things along that line.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard him on radio for quite some time, but he seemed to give a lot of good scientific information.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. Jim has some real blind spots. For one thing, he doesn't understand torsion field physics, so he's interpreting a lot of things through conventional physics. I mean, that was his training. Number two, he has a real blind spot when it comes to this comet, asteroid, whatever, which he says is sneaking up on us from the South Pole, and that's why there are observatories built at the South Pole that can be the only ones to see it, and everybody else is in the blind. And, of course, he's totally wrong about that, because if you're farther from the Earth than a few, you know, 1,000 miles, I mean, 20, 30,000 miles, you can see something coming anywhere below the equator. You don't have to be at the South Pole to see it. So simple geometric optical projection seems to be one of Jim's problems, and that's why I don't pay much attention to what he's been saying lately.
Right. Well, I noticed he was more radical on tapes that he had posted on his website than what he was doing on Coast to Coast. He would be a lot more, he wouldn't express radically opinions mm-hmm. on Coast to Coast.
Well, I mean, look, we all modulate for our audiences, and Coast to Coast, even if it was, you know, late at night and the show was started by Art and carried on by George, it evolved in time to where those people, those audiences, and I could tell from the emails, were much more conventional in their thinking than I was used to or happened in the earlier years of Coast. So Jim may have modulated his remarks to suit the audience. Nothing wrong with that. The key neat part about the internet is if you put your best stuff forward in your own website and stand behind it, people will find it.
That's true. On the moon, are you going to cover some of the artifacts they found on the moon again, or has there been some new information, you know, like the microwave dish they had a picture of and things like that?
I don't think I know about the microwave dish.
Well, they had a thing that looked kind of like a microwave dish. It was some kind of a rock structure on there.
Well, when you say again, is this a YouTube video you found?
I think these were NASA photos.
But who was presenting them?
I really don't remember. It's a couple of months ago, but they had several things. I think you even had some pictures. You said, well, right here looks a lot like a building or, you know, something that was on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think that maybe Atlantis or something like that back there may have had enough of technology where they could have gone to the moon and done something up there. It doesn't have to be aliens.
I totally agree that a lot of the things that we're finding all over the solar system, particularly on Comet 67P, and to a much lesser extent in some of the Pluto imagery I've been looking at, appear to be vehicles, craft, whatever, from successive expeditions that are much, much, much younger than the really ancient ET stuff we've been finding, but a lot older than anything that we've been sending out there for the last 50 years. Now, until we get close-ups, until we get ground truth, until we get, you know, close-up and personal, this is all just a scenario, just a hypothesis. But I certainly agree with you that there are things on the moon that are not ancient, that are, let's say, within the last 30,000 to 12,000 years that are put there by a previous high-tech terrestrial civilization. The problem, of course, is how do you prove it?
You know, and why would the government want to keep it secret?
Oh, that's a whole other
part of our history, you know.
That's a huge discussion. Huge.
They're dead now, so it doesn't make any difference whether they went there or not.
Oh, no. Because remember, you have to keep the secret that there's any technology from anybody but ours out there. Because the in crowd want to keep all this high-tech advanced knowledge to themselves. And you do that by simply telling everybody, you're the only ones that ever have existed, you're the only planet in the whole universe that ever has life, and you just go from there. If you isolate us completely, they have basically free rein to find and steal and keep stuff for themselves, and we never get to hear about it.
Right. And they say they've got stuff that's 50 years ahead of what we have now. And you wonder what in the world they have hidden in Area 51 or wherever they got it.
Well, if we got the right president, maybe we might find out.
We might find out.
Well, I thank you for the call.
I didn't mean to tie you up but I was really curious about the fact that it looked like over 50 years north had been moving around and stuff, and I just thought I would ask about that.
Well, compasses are different from optics, so keep that in mind.
Right.
So,
and, I guess I should let you go so you can get to some of the other people
okay.
have good questions.
All righty. Thank you much.
And I hope.
Whoops. Okay. Our numbers, 505-796-8802, 505-796-8802, and Enterprise Mission is our Skype. For the folks who were on the line and calling and then they disappeared from my screen, please call back because I think Skype has a limit on how long it lets you ring before you're basically discontinued. Because what I don't want to do, and I've tried that a couple of times in the last couple of shows, I've tried kind of putting people on hold on the screen. And unfortunately, when people call, they don't mute their mic. They have distractions going on in the background. They have this show going on in the background. So we hear all that. We don't want to hear all that. So when you call, make sure that your device is turned down, your mic is turned down until I call for you, and then you can turn on your mic, and that way you won't be distracting to the show. So let's see who this is. And you're on the air. Tell us your name. Tell us where you're calling from, and please turn down your device.
I think you just picked up me. Am I correct?
I don't know.
This is Kevin in Colorado.
Oh, Kevin. Your friend in San Diego. Scott was just telling us about you.
Yep.
So what do you know about this reduction in disabled benefits that's been sneaking around under the radar, obviously?
I've been hearing about it. I don't know if it's actually got passed into law. I think there was something on it as the one man's. But it's been pretty quiet. And what irritates me is that there are a good many people, even in my own family, that are like, oh, great, the government's cutting back on waste and fraud.
Mm.
Yeah, but they're doing it at the expense of those of us who can't, in many cases, do anything about it. And that's what upsets me the most is, and yeah, I'm blind and I've got a few other medical issues, but even me, there's people a whole lot worse off than me that make a whole lot less than I do on disability because I was in the workforce for, 30 years before I became disabled, 20 years
But you see, that was factored into the law. You actually paid into these funds. Your tax dollars paid into funds. It's not charity. It's not, largesse. It's your due as part of the United States of America contract between you and the government. You paid in those taxes. You deserve those benefits. And if someone's trying to artificially cut those benefits, they're stealing from you.
Yes, and most of the American people haven't a clue because they don't pay attention to their politics. They listen to the sound bites instead of looking behind the politics, so to speak, to see what's really going on and who's doing what. When you get a guy like Greg Abbott in Texas, who's disabled himself, who cuts benefits when he profited from those benefits when he first became disabled, how hypocritical can you get? And I'll get off my soapbox now, but
Kevin, do me a favor. Would you chase down this law and send me an email with specifics, with sourcing, with commentary? I need to know more about this, because if this is happening and no one is talking about it and it actually has been enacted, I mean, I can't imagine that the president would have signed a law like that, but if there is a constituency, political constituency, that's trying to ram this through, we need to be aware.
Well, we do, and it may take a couple of days, but I'll look up what I can on it, what House bill it was and that kind of thing.
Excellent.
It's more mostly Republican-led. There's probably a few Democrats that signed on, but, It's what I talked about the other day in my email to you. The politics, or not even the politics, the consciousness behind the politics. And I agree with you. Everybody's focusing on the bad, but if the bad was this 8.3 earthquake that happened, what is to say that there is not some good that is coming along the way?
Mm-hmm.
And
you have to keep in mind that the news business is set up to basically give us bad news. Man bites dog makes news, dog bites man is ignored. So there is a preferential skewing of news to awful and terrible things as opposed to the positive things that are going on. And in fact, there have been many attempts in television and in radio to do positive news, and they have terrible, sucky ratings because people they're not interested. They want drama. That's why the Trump phenomenon is so interesting, why it's taken over everything, because Donald has become this one-man show, basically jousting against all of these establishment windmills, be it, the politicos, the funding process for campaigns, the hedge fund guys that are making hundreds of millions while, the rest of us pay through the nose. Or, even something simple like, I can't think of the example I had on the tip of my tongue. The point is, news is news if it's bad, because that's kind of why we watch dramas and fictions and movies. If there's no conflict in a movie, it's boring.
Yes, for the most part. But a movie like Contact
had conflict.
Yeah,
remember the conflict between Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey? The religious guy who didn't believe her, and the missing 18, minutes of her free fall and all that. And then the very end scene where the head of the project is talking to a presidential advisor, and the big thing comes out that there was this missing time on the tape. She actually had physical proof of what she remembered after all.
Yep.
But that was conflict. Good drama is conflict. The problem is reality has become television. It's become film. It's become movies. I mean, what we're seeing in this election cycle, to me, is a absolutely natural progression from a time when politics was separate. It was actually separate from the normal pop culture of our society. And now it is so interwoven with social media and the internet and, people going on reality. Remember there was a rage a few years ago, people would go on reality shows like Jerry Springer and talk about the most horrible, awful things in their families?
It turned out that they were faking it the whole time.
But they wanted to be on television.
Yep,
people
exactly.
love drama on television. So, to me, what we're seeing is absolutely to be expected. And again, wiser and cooler heads must prevail, or we are going to lose our republic. I mean, it's not going to be from enemies within or without. It's going to be from people who are mesmerized by watching television.
And that has gone on for a good part of the last 60 years. I listen, since I'm blind, I listen to a lot of the old-time radio programs, and your program on Asimov last night, him and, I can't think of the other science fiction writer, were a good part of the Dimension X scripts.
Arthur Clarke?
Arthur C. Clarke, but there was the other, the Asimov, the other science fiction writer when Asimov was a big two. There was Asimov,
and what did this other writer write?
He did Ray Bradbury.
Oh, Ray, okay.
Yeah, Mars finally.
The Martian Chronicles.
Right. And there were a couple of really good shows that were done off of those Martian Chronicles.
You know what we ought to do some night? We actually ought to go and find some of those things and play them. I think they're in public domain. We could just take people back to the original radio. In fact, Robin gave me, I think it was Tom Corbett Space Cadet for Christmas. She found a CD. And then she also one year gave me a bunch of the Long John Nebel shows, which when Art called me up and said, how'd you like to do a show? I thought, well, maybe I could reconstruct with modern technology what Long John did in that studio there at WOR in New York in the 1950s. And lo and behold, here we are. Okay, I'm going to let you go. We've got a ton of other people, and we only got a few minutes to the bottom of the hour. Thanks for the call, and by all means, call
us
back.
Thank you. I'll let you know on that, Bill.
Okay. You're on the air. Please turn down your device. Are you driving?
No, I'm not.
There's noise in the background, like you're driving down a highway on a moonlit night in the desert.
Oh.
Who are you, and where are you calling from?
Hi, yo, Torch here.
Oh, Torch, okay.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Does this sound better?
Much better.
Okay. I can't believe you hit on all those five things almost at one time with the war that's going on in space.
Okay.
You know, you got that Solar Warden going on, and
if that's real.
Right.
See, I don't think anything that we hear leaked is real. I think it's deliberate. Uh-huh. I think it's deliberate disinformation to steer us away from the real stuff, because we have no independent way of checking.
Uh-huh. Well, the chemtrails are real.
Chemtrails are real, yes.
Yeah, and I think that's a part of it.
I'm not so sure. I think chemtrails are part of an effort to head off global warming, because Torch, when I'm talking, please don't interrupt.
Sorry.
Wait till I stop, then you can talk. We found years ago when I was doing Art Show, I actually reached out to a friend of mine. We were trying to borrow a Learjet to get up high enough to get samples of the chemtrails to actually do an analysis. As part of his research, he discovered a NASA document out of, I think, NASA Lewis, which is the NASA Center in Cleveland, Ohio, where they actually laid out a plan to scatter fine aerosols in the stratosphere to reflect solar energy as the temperatures on the Earth's surface, because of global warming, increased. So we know there is an actual government plan. What we were not able to find is the enacting legislation or the actual documents proving that that plan was put into effect. But I think it's pretty obvious that something major is going on. That's the rationale. And so that's my conclusion, that chemtrails are a kind of a really dumb effort to alleviate global warming, because they can't address the issues that cause global warming, because politically that's... You basically can't go there.
Right. Some of the stuff that I've been checking up on added to manipulation of the ionosphere with HARP. It's the aluminum chafe that they're using is being used for some type of weapon or whatever.
What do you mean? What do you mean weapon? At table, why don't you hold it there? Because we're at the bottom of the hour. I really want to play Bob Wright's song through its entirety. Scotty, please pay attention. Because the lyrics, I want you to pay attention to the lyrics. This guy really captured this show. And I don't know what we're going to do with this, but I'm really intrigued with Bob Wright's The Other Side of Midnight. And we'll be back right after these words.
Side of midnight, if you really listen hard, you can hear what the universe is saying. Time for you to wander through the mansions in your mind. Nothing to lose, there's everything to find. Other side of midnight, on the other side of midnight, the day has just begun, but somewhere on this pale blue dot, it's midday in the sun that shines on everyone at some time in the day. Something to say. Other side midnight, the other side of midnight, you can get to thinking. The other side of midnight, you can find your place. On the other side, when you're dealing with the mysteries of time and space, the other side of midnight, if you really listen hard, you can hear what the universe is saying. Time for you to wander through in your mind. Nothing to lose, there's everything to find. Other side midnight, other side midnight, other side midnight, other side midnight, other side midnight.
And we are back. Welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight. You know, I really, really, really like that song. It's growing on me. I had an interesting little disagreement with Ross this morning. And I must say, the more I hear it, the more I'm really liking not only the lyrics, but Bob's delivery. Okay, back to the calls. You're on the air. Where are you calling from, and who are you?
This is Phil Torch.
Oh, Torch, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Do you have anything else to tell us, or did you want to...
Well, yeah, besides the chemtrails and the, what's going on in space, it always seems to go back to this asteroid that's supposedly coming.
There's no asteroid coming. No asteroid coming. Repeat that after me. Everybody out there, no asteroid is coming, period.
The warning's coming.
No, there's no warnings. There's nothing coming. The thing that's going to come is going to be so surprising and so astonishing and so amazing. And we human beings interpret this as fear, fear, fear. There's nothing to fear except us. We're our worst enemies. Good God, look around the world. We're our worst enemies.
Do you know what the warning is?
Yes.
Okay.
Remember the stupid hoax last night I talked about, the Pope? you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's nonsense. That's not what he's coming here to talk about. That's not happening. So what warning, what other warning? I mean, see, look, I kind of close off all on the fear porn because, remember, in our model, this is designed to get us to cower under our beds, to be so much more controllable, because you can only be controlled if you are fearful.
The warning is from the Marian apparitions, Garabandal.
Okay. And what makes them the voice of God?
Yeah. Voice of God.
Well, what makes their what makes their warning any more than all the other zillions of warnings that are out there?
Well, because that's the one I believe is actually going to occur.
Let's see, should I let him tell us what he thinks could occur or shouldn't I? Okay, Torch, you're on the air. Tell us, quickly, what do you think's going
to
occur?
Well, it's supposed to be like two stars colliding, and then it's going to be like a 15-minute event.
Wait. Two stars colliding where?
In space.
Okay, do you know how close the nearest star is?
No, I said it's supposed to be like two stars colliding, or asteroids colliding, or comets colliding.
No. Stars and asteroids are not in the same ballpark. If two stars collide and two asteroids collide, one, you don't even notice, the other, you're dead.
Yeah, this is a child trying to describe something that she really doesn't understand. And then it's supposed to be everyone will...
I'll tell you what, Torch, when you kind of get this more organized, come back to us and give us a coherent perspective on this, but I'm not getting much tonight from this, so I think we're going to move on, okay?
Gotcha, brother. Take care.
You too.
Hey, I haven't heard from Kevin yet either.
So. Kevin was just on.
He was just on before you. Works for you?
No. Kevin? Nobody named Kevin works for me.
Third star on the left? Kevin will contact you?
No.
Okay.
No, Kevin. Mind. Okay.
Thank you, Rich.
Later. Okay, let's try this one. Good morning. You're on the air. Where are you calling from? Turn down your device and give us your name.
Hi, it's Joy.
Hi, Joy. Oh, Joy has a joyful voice.
Yes, thank you. I'm in Santa Cruz.
And do not go near the water tonight.
I'm way up in the mountains, so
I'll be okay. Okay.
I might have waterfront property, but let's hope not. I was calling. I thought that, you know, through with the debates and everything, it might have gone under your radar, something that happened today. And other than the tsunami and the other tsunami you were talking about, by the way, was Fukushima, and that was in 2011.
Right.
Today, the CIA released over 2,500 presidential briefs from 1961 to 1969.
Covering Kennedy
and Johnson administrations. Yeah, all of these classified PDBs.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what gem did you find in there?
Well, I haven't found any yet because I haven't started reading them yet.
Oh, darn, I thought you had something really like a scoop tonight.
Well, we might get one. I mean, they just released them today, so I haven't been reading them myself yet, but I heard about it, and I thought you might be interested in it.
How did they release them?
There was a big announcement. I guess it's on somewhere on their website.
Do you have a link?
Talking about it tonight.
Do you have a link?
Yes, I do. Let's see. Well, I can say it's on some kind of news site. But,
do me a favor. Tell us where we can find this. Send me an email. My contact info is at the top of othersideofmidnight.com, right-hand side. You'll find, you know, RCH. Send it to me there. And if we don't get it up tonight and it's kind of late, we'll put it up on the other side of midnight tomorrow night, because this could be a very interesting set of
very big
documents.
Yeah, it could be. Okay, look for the line. Other people out there, look for the line, CIA releases top secret documents from Kennedy-Johnson administrations. And then you should be able to find it if you type that in verbatim. But I will definitely send you the link. It's on KXAN, but it was also discussed on MSNBC tonight by Rachel Maddow.
See, I was watching the debate. I wasn't watching Rachel.
Yeah,
and then I was prepping for the show, so I wasn't watching Rachel. So,
I think this is significant.
Oh, very, very. I would love to know if in those documents there is an actual Kennedy memo, as you said, a PDB, referencing a project which I want to discuss on the show at some length called Iron Mountain.
Iron Mountain?
Okay. Ever heard of the report from Iron Mountain?
No.
Oh, huge. We don't have time to go into it tonight, but I'm working up a show on that with the right people, and if there is any official documentation from the Kennedy years relating to the report from Iron Mountain, I want to know. See, what I want to do is I want to get this posted or a link out there so that this audience, which is huge. Tonight, let me give you an example. Ross put up on my Facebook page the notice of the tsunami off California, you know, coming up the coast from off Chile earlier in the evening. And then he was tracking the numbers. In an hour or two, 25,000 people had sent that information all over the web from our Facebook website, from our Facebook page. 25,000 people in a couple of hours. That's a staggering number of people who obviously are paying attention to this show. So if you put it out there, we can find anything because we got all those eyes looking.
Well, if we can find the link of where they put this, where they put all these PDBs, and all of those people can help look for this particular item.
Well, if it was the CIA, obviously, if they're calling attention, it must be on the CIA official website.
Yeah.
I would think. Have you looked?
I haven't gone there yet. I just decided to call you about it.
Can you do that while you're on the air?
I'm trying to right now. I'm trying to send you the link.
Okay.
Kennedy didn't call them PDBs. His acronym for them was PICLES.
And do we know why?
It was Presidential Information something or other. But he wanted them the size of like an index card that he could keep in his breast pocket so that he could look at them whenever he wanted to.
Oh, well, this is pre-internet. Now, of course, the president has a BlackBerry or whatever the equivalent
right.
is.
Right, but it was really fascinating, the difference between Johnson and
well, I saw, tonight's kind of Reagan, you know, everybody's Reagan, and the debate was held at the presidential library and all that, and they ran old video, and it was so interesting to see Reagan come out in these old videos, you know, from behind the door, behind the curtain, go to the podium, and reach into his inside breast pocket and take out a little post-it card, and that is what he had, his notes, just a few notes. But yeah, up until the digital age, People at the top of the pile used paper, or in this case, cardboard.
I still use paper.
Me too. In fact, every night, except tonight, I didn't do it tonight because I knew what I was going to be doing, but normally before the show, I actually take a small pad, and I write down what I'm going to do at the top of the show and who the guest is and that kind of thing, just to keep, you know, track. And I do not use an electronic device for it. I use a pen and a good old piece of paper.
I remember it better if I write it down.
Yeah. Well, that's, that's kinesthetic memory.
The name Pickle comes from, called Pickle for short, was the Presidential's Intelligence Checklist.
Oh, okay.
And it was born in June 1961.
Isn't the internet wonderful?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I mean, look, just that example. You and I and the thousands and thousands of people listening, we have access to more information instantaneously than Kennedy did as President of the United States. Think about that. Ordinary, average people have access to more intelligence. Now, the problem is, how do you filter it? Because the internet is full of everything, both amazing stuff and junk. And hoaxes and crap and all the other names I could think to call it. So you have to be discerning. You know, my friend Torch, he really thinks that there's something going to happen because he's reading the internet. Torch needs to get a better discerning filter.
And I found the place on the CIA where it is.
Oh, cool. Okay, so give that out verbally, and then you can send it to me as email. We'll put it up on the site if we can tonight. If not, we'll have it tomorrow night because we only got about 15 minutes left in the show. And probably people are, well, a lot of people drift off to sleep this time of night, and then they go to the archives. Because they're smart. They're members of Club 19-5.
I have to be one of those. I found it. It's www.foia.
FOIA.
CIA. Gov. /collection. All little letters. /PDB. And then lowercase s. PDBs.
PDB caps and then s lowercase.
Right.
And, okay.
And it's got 2,500 presidential briefs.
Wow. Now, it says it says FOIA.
It's searchable.
It's FOIA, Freedom of Information Act. So who filed this act and who forced these documents from the CIA into the public?
From what I got from the story is that President Obama said it's time to release these things.
Oh, like Clinton did with the Corona photography some years ago.
Yeah.
For those who don't remember, we had secret spy satellites developed during the Eisenhower years, and they were under a CIA project codename called Corona. By the way, some night I'm going to decode what Corona really was doing. But anyway, Clinton suddenly, out of nowhere, declassified a huge number of these incredible high-resolution early spy satellite images taken of us and the Soviet Union and all over the world on film, and then returned by a capsule to the Earth and picked up by an aircraft over the Pacific. And they put them on websites, on the CIA website. So Obama's doing the same thing with Kennedy and Johnson's years?
Yes.
Fascinating.
And guess what? The first thing I got when I typed in Iron Mountain, because it's totally searchable.
Yes.
Report from Iron Mountain on the possibility and desirability of peace.
Yes! That's the one! It's in these memos?
Yes.
Oh, this is incredible. I've been looking for this. Robin and I have been looking for this for literally 2 or 3 years. She's done so many programs. By the way, Robin Palkov has a show later in the morning than I am on another network called Revolution Radio for 2 hours, beginning at 8 o'clock our time. It's 8 o'clock Mountain, so it would be 7 o'clock Pacific and 10 o'clock Eastern for 2 hours. And she's done a lot of shows on Iron Mountain. But I have yet to do one because I wanted to wait until we found actual documentation of my theory, which is this was not a hoax, as it's been claimed. This actually was a quiet initiative by John Kennedy, and you tonight have just proved it.
Well, there's another document here that says, Iron Mountain Peace Study, a hoax Pentagon declares.
Okay, but that's the Pentagon. That's not the White House.
Right, and
and if it was real, the Pentagon, of course, would deny it.
And then there's also sightings of unidentified flying objects underneath this.
Really?
Yeah. But that might just be mountains. All kinds of things about UFOs under here.
Wow. Well, obviously, this audience needs to go through this. And, you know, when you go through it, send me emails. I'll read through them. I try to read every email. I may not respond to you. But a lot of my day, you know, after I get off the show, like 3 o'clock my time, I literally spend from 3 to around 7 in the morning going through emails, answering emails, and watching Morning Joe. Because that's my take on the day. What's important, what I should look for when I get up in the afternoon to get ready for, you know, this show.
I have a better suggestion than Morning Joe. Watch Stephanie Miller.
Okay. See, I like Morning Joe because they have roundtables and they bring in Republicans, independents, people you know, people you don't know. It's kind of like the show, except it's on television and you have to dress up for it.
Okay, I just don't like Joe.
Scotty's telling me in my ear that the URL is not working. So what we need to do is to have you send it to me in an email and I'll send it to him and we'll put it up for tomorrow night or tomorrow morning. Depending upon where you are on this rotating globe, and that way we'll get it out. Because we really don't have much time left in this morning's show to have people actually go and look at it.
Okay, well, do I send it to him or to you?
Send it to both.
Okay.
Remember, on emails that are important, no single point failure. Send it out everywhere that might be important.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Webmaster at othersideofmidnight.com would be one of your copyings. Okay. And my name... Send it to my producer. It's all up there under the contact.
Okay, I'll just send it to all three of you.
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay. All right.
Super. Well, you have made my night.
Good.
You have made my night, Joy.
This is going to be fascinating.
You are appropriately named. please call again, okay?
All right. Well, you have a great night.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Okay. You're on the air. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
My name is Jerry. I'm calling from Alaska.
And it sounds like it.
Well, can you hear my fire snapping?
I just hear you kind of like waving in the ether because you're a long ways away. Anyway, what did you want to talk about?
I just wanted to ask you, you said you knew some Eskimo friends up north that were telling you that the sun is rising and setting in different spots and
mm-hmm.
the stars are different?
Mm-hmm. This was several years ago.
Oh, okay. Well, because I've lived up here for over 30 years, and the sky is still the same. All the stars are there.
Hang on. What I'm describing would be local. So you could be, let's say, down the coast by 30, 40 miles, you wouldn't see anything different. Because these bubbles are created, if this model is correct, these bubbles are created temporarily by the use of these weapons that graze or interact the outer atmosphere, and then they will go away. You know, the atmosphere will heal itself quickly because there's a lot of dynamic stuff going on in the atmosphere. So you could be, you know, 20, 30 miles from a village up the coast, and usually it's on the coast because this stuff's gone over the ocean where you can't see it, or the polar cap where no one is supposed to be able to see what's going on. So even if you haven't seen anything unusual, doesn't mean that somebody else up there has not.
Okay, well, you said you had friends. I was just wondering what their last name were and which village they were from.
Well, I wouldn't give that out on the air anyway. Why would I do that?
A last name and a village?
Why would I do that?
Because I want to know.
But I see.
Because I know a lot of people.
Well,
up here.
The fact that you want to know doesn't mean that you're going to get to know, because I keep my sources secret. That's the first rule in journalism. Otherwise, you don't get any sources. Unless someone gives me permission to put their name on the air, I do not put their name on the air.
It's just a last name in the village.
And if they're that small, you can track it down from last names. I'm sorry, we're not going to go there. Okay. I'm going to move on to the next call.
I worked at the radio station, and I knew a lot of people's last names.
Well, that's not the way this show operates.
Because I would like to...
Okay, Clive, you're on the air. Good morning, Clive. Hello, hello, hello. Going once. Going twice. Going three times. Okay, look, I want to be very clear. If somebody asks me for information on someone who's given me information, I will not tell you unless I have permission from that person to divulge what it is I put out on the air. Now, Art has a very similar policy, except he has something a little different. He has a thing set up called the wormhole, and everybody who sends to the wormhole is automatically giving him permission by using that data stream to put their name out and put what they're saying out, because that's the whole idea, is to get stuff on the air. But I will not divulge private confidences or information, even if you live in Alaska, even if you've been in radio, you should know better. Okay? Okay, Tom's calling. Where are you calling from, Tom?
Hello, hello, hello.
Back off a little bit from your mic. You're over-modulating just a tad.
Can you hear me?
Oh, much better, much better. Thank you.
You can hear me, huh?
I can hear you. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? That is really strange. I wonder why we're having problems with Tom. Okay. Tom, can you hear us? Hello? Okay. I'm not hearing Tom. Okay. So let's go to our next call. I don't know whether I'm still seeing that I'm connected, but I don't see I don't hear a response coming back. That's very curious. Very curious indeed. Okay. While we're waiting to see what's going on with Skype, our number is 505-796-8802, and our Skype name is Enterprise Mission. We still have a few minutes left in the show, about 4 minutes. If you want to get in with a quick question, let me see. Is Dave on the line? Hello? That's very strange. Very strange indeed. Okay, so we'll get rid of all that. And this sometimes happens, particularly when you're using new technology, which tonight, obviously, the technology doesn't want to cooperate at all. I'm not quite sure why. Very, very weird. Very strange. Okay, we only got a few minutes left, and apparently I'm now getting a prompt on my screen saying, Skype has decided to cut out on you for the rest of the show. So I don't think we want to... Let me try one more time. Okay. No, this is not working. Not working at all. Okay, guys, I'm sorry. It seems that we've lost Skype, so I have a few minutes here to fill all by myself. Let's see, what could I do to fill the time? How could we productively take the time? Let me try one more time. Good morning.
Hello.
There you are. Okay, back off your mic a little. Back off.
Yeah. Okay. I just turned it down.
Okay, you're on the air.
Hi, Richard. It's Claude.
Yep.
Because you saw my caller ID last time. Yeah, I listened to the Robert Mornings show, was it a week ago or something? And that was a really good show, actually. It was a great show.
You mean Robert Morningstar?
Yeah, didn't I say Robert Morningstar? Sorry, it's 2 in the morning. Basically, I kind of went to that website when I got home. I actually just came from an astronomy meeting that night. I had played live music there. But I saw there was a link for Columbus ISV, and I've never heard you actually refer to it, to whether you consider there was any validity, whether you think it was just a fake or...
Refresh my memory. Columbus ISV.
Yeah, it was allegedly a mission. It seemed like a conventional flight to Mars, a manned flight to Mars in 1973.
In
63? No, actually it said 73.
Okay, okay.
There.
73,
Well, if it was real, they were using 16mm film. Very shaky. I mean, I thought...
Mm.
Yeah, if it was real, the astronaut should have been fired for bad.
Even what you're describing feels like a hoax to me, because chemical rockets to take a human mission to Mars done in secret in 73, not possible. With anti-gravity, yes, but not with rockets.
Okay, because, yeah, the flight lasted allegedly 180 days, so it would have been conventional.
Exactly, Holman transfer orbit. So,
The only thing about it that was really convincing was the actual footage as they arrived in orbit. It was quite amazing. It was, it really looks like Mars. I mean, it looks, you know, the colors, mm-hmm. the cloud. There was a few light cloud formations and. It just really looked kind of real, yeah. And there was one really great.
Unfortunately, Clive, we're at the end of the show, so
yeah.
Why don't you call back another time, give me a little more background with sources, links, whatever. And Greg, I know you're standing by, but we're going to have to go because it's the end of us tonight or this morning or whatever. So,
I'm going to send you a track. This is more dynamic, which I think would work with your show.
Okay. Thank you much.
Okay, bye-bye.
So, from the other side of midnight, my wish for every one of you is that you join us again, same time, same station, tomorrow morning. And we'll be back with a remarkable guest. We're going to be talking about the moon and things you won't believe someone has found on the moon. And until then, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning.